This is Marna Weston for the Sam Proctor Oral History Program on March 22, 2011, in Pearl, Mississippi, at the home of Reverend Ira K. Jefferson and his wife, Miss Anita Jefferson. I want to thank you both very much for letting me speak to you tonight.
Thank you for coming.
So I've been instructed this will primarily be me speaking to Mrs. Jefferson, and Reverend Jefferson will come in, I guess, kind of like wrestling when he needs to. He's a tag in when it's necessary. But we just had a marvelous dinner, and I've been familiarized with some family heirlooms, treasured photograph of Mrs. Jefferson's mother and her daughter, and a letter, a memento that she writes to her mother, has written in the past and had done
two different years. This was 1990, and this one was done 94. Mm-hmm. And my mother passed in 1984, mm-hmm. just a few days before her birthday. And when we had the funeral, my brother's a minister, he preached the funeral. And he took his text from this passage, who can find Proverbs 31, who can find a virtuous woman? A price is far above rubies. And his subject was, I thought, very apropos for such a woman. He said, Eureka, we have found her. And truly she was a virtuous woman.
Why, as a daughter, do you think it's important to remember your mother in this way?
She was a special woman, a woman worth remembering her. And of course, I included her in that book.
Your 1991 Songs of Unsung Heroes?
Right. It's a collection of 42 people whom I have found to be very instrumental in my life as I grew up in our church, and not just our church, but some elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And my mother is one of them, Matilda Bingham. Mm-hmm. My father, my brother, oldest brother. And those, I think, all of my relatives. But they are among the 42 people that I can remember who have been very useful mm-hmm. in my life. And I said here, as we started to introduce it here, a quote that I thought was very meaningful. They gave the pitch. We sang the tune. It's been so long back in 91, I guess it was, when I did this. Mm-hmm. And it meant a lot then. I had said I was going to do a volume 2. Mm-hmm. And I still like to do one, but I haven't gotten to it yet. And my children always wonder, when are you going to do Daddy's Story?
That will be volume 2.
But I'm doing one now, the life story of the founder of our church, Bishop Charles Price Jones. And, well, that was one I did in 2009. And it was a fallout from what I'm doing, the biography. And there were there was so much to be passed, and I thought it was too much to incorporate in the biography cover, and I decided to make it under a separate cover and entitled it Excellence Comes with Great Labor. Mm-hmm. And that's one of his quotations, and I use that as the title of the book.
Mm-hmm. When and where were you born?
In Jackson, Mississippi, mm-hmm. right here.
Mm-hmm. Was there a midwife, or were you born in a hospital?
I'm sure it was a midwife. Mm-hmm. Aunt Betty, we called her. Mm-hmm. That's who I heard about. That she would have been the one who delivered all of us. Mm-hmm. There were 9 of us in the family. Dear, would you get that family picture? Family tree picture. Let him see it, please. And, this is another one of those quotes that keep me going when I get tired in my writing and whatever project I happen to be on. Mm-hmm. It's very meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay, this is a rather ornate family tree.
I thought it was a good way to remember my folks.
Yeah, take a picture of that?
Surely. Okay. Can you get it all on your little film, on your little camera?
Oh, man, this is an iPhone. We can do anything with these. Yeah, okay, hang on. I've got it on. I had it on video. I had it on video as well, okay. Okay.
Yep, that's my father's and mother's. My father's dad and mom, mm-hmm. then my dad and mom, my daddy, my mom, mm-hmm. my oldest brother. This is the youngest sister, mm-hmm. and all in between.
That's quite impressive. Mm-hmm. Okay, would you like to read this quotation that you shared with me?
Yeah. Okay, I think it's very good, and I have to read it often. Mm-hmm. The zeal and strength of our endeavors must be superior to the difficulties to be surmounted. Discouragement should have no place where industry, persistency, and ingenuity or faith eternal may at last bring the required results. And that's a quotation by Charles Price Jones.
What do those words mean to you?
Well, the zeal, the inspiration, the fervor behind what I'm trying to do must be superior, above, more than the difficulties that I will face in doing it. And discouragement should have no place where industry, persistency, integrity, or faith eternal may bring lasting results. In other words, I'm working toward these results that will be lasting, ongoing, eternal, and I can't let the difficulties stop me from allowing that to happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other one over there, excellence comes with great labor, and that's one of my ambitions. Excellence, to do everything with the best that I have, or all that I have. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you didn't mention your day and date of birth, but I think I know why you didn't mention the year from our conversation in the car. So can you share your day and date? You're just the month and the day?
I share all of it.
Okay.
I thank the Lord for mm-hmm. the opportunity to say it.
Okay.
I got that, I guess, from my mom. As a little girl, she would always tell us how old she was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as children, you would think that, ooh, that's old. But now we know better. Mm-hmm. I was born December 6, 1937. And my husband was born.
Your age.
Yeah, she just volunteered you. Maybe he was going to hold back. But since you're out there now, so when and where were you born, sir?
October 1835.
And where were you born?
In West Mifflin, Pennsylvania.
West Mifflin.
Yeah.
That's near Pittsburgh.
Yeah, outside of Pittsburgh, about 7 miles, I guess.
And were you born in a hospital or was there a midwife? Born at home. Okay. Well, let's talk about your parents for just a second. Who were your mom and dad?
Let's see. My dad was Lewis L. Jefferson.
Okay. And where was he from?
At some point, he became Reverend Lewis L. Jefferson.
Okay. Where was he from?
He was originally from South Carolina.
Okay. And your mother?
Her name was Janie C. Jefferson, and she was originally from North Carolina.
Okay, what part of North Carolina? Were they one of these, close to the border romances?
They met in Pittsburgh. Oh. They both came north to, he came north to work, and she came north to live with her aunt, I think is what it was. Mm-hmm. And so they met in Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh area, not in Pittsburgh.
Do you recall their birthdays?
My mother's birthday was leap year. Now, the date, I don't know.
21st, I think.
29th.
29th.
February 29th?
Was, yeah, the last day of February. So she has birthday every 4 years.
Okay.
And his birthday was?
January.
Was it January? Huh? I don't remember when his birthday was.
I think his birthday was January.
January what?
1/15.
I have no idea. I can't completely lost my memory. I know he was born the year before the year, like her mother was born in 1900. He was born in
1899. Do you have any memory of your mother or father's parents, your grandparents?
No.
Okay, on either side?
No, neither one.
Okay.
Now, she mother was raised by her aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Was after she got grown enough to leave Carolina and come to Pittsburgh. And as a child, she was raised by, well, still wasn't her mother. Maybe her mother died when she was about 6 or something, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know.
She was raised by her grandmother, I believe.
Yeah.
Dear, would you get that quilt, the family quilt, with all of their pictures on it? Both sides of the family.
You make it bad.
Mm-hmm. You've
been working hard since I first came here. You are a workman worthy of his wage, sir. You are a workman worthy of his wage. You were doing plates over the KFC. I know he's happy to do so. Now, how about your mom and dad?
Well,
we talked a little bit about your mother. Who were her parents?
Her parents lived, we call it down, on the Spring Ridge Road.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Terry, Mississippi, not far from here now. We thought, when we were children, we thought it was a long way out in the country. And they were McCowns. Matilda McCown was her maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And she was born in 1900, right at the century. And it was always easy to keep up with her age. And she was a very devout woman. Love the Lord with all of her heart. No hypocrisy. she was genuine. My father was a minister. He loved the Lord. He pastored, he said, he pastored four churches, but he said of himself that he preached at four churches because you couldn't pastor four churches at the same time. And but he did his best, and he was employed with the Illinois Central Railroad. Mm-hmm. And he went, as I can remember, went to work early in the morning, about 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And we liked his working there because as an employee, he could get free passes. Mm-hmm. For us to go here, there, and yon.
So you could ride the train.
So we got a chance to ride the train. Mm-hmm. And so we had a trip to Chicago in California. And we got to stop at places in between as the train stopped and connected. Mm-hmm. So we appreciated those opportunities to travel.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your dad's name?
Willie Bingham, Sr.
Okay.
Was Reverend Willie Bingham. He was a minister.
Now, we are looking at a very ornate quilt. Your workman has returned. And he's spreading it out. And it is, to describe it, this is a tapestry. It's white with maroon or burgundy check borders, but there are individuals in each of the squares, and there appear to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 across on the bottom, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 coming down the sides for 56 squares.
I started out making it for queen king size bed, but mm-hmm. it went beyond the king size.
So this is an actual functional quilt as well, if you choose it to be.
Yes, mm-hmm. I could use it more as a spread, mm-hmm. bedspread.
Okay, and it has scenes of, you know, going from individuals to couples to 3 and 4 people, all family
these
scenes.
Our parents, his mm-hmm. parents, my parents, mm-hmm. his sisters and brothers, my sisters and brothers, mm-hmm. and our children.
So representing both sides of the family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who were your, it's beautiful. By the way, it must have taken a lot of work. There's a lot of love in this quilt.
It did.
You can just see that there's a lot of love in it. And the photos are excellent because they go from, you know, maybe some photos taken in the last 10 years to photos taken. It looks like there's some photos from World War II.
This was
some
our
drawings.
Home.
Mm-hmm.
This is our family home.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah,
a drawing.
Okay.
Of the family home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what would you say would be the oldest photo? How far back would it represent? Because some of them are old, but they're colorized as well. Like that looks like a World War II photo, but it's in color. But I can tell by the clothes and kind of the color scheme that it's...
Now, my sister was younger than I. Mm-hmm. And she and I were the youngest ones at home, and our brother there with our mother and father. We were the latest ones to leave, last ones to leave home.
That's with the five of you right there?
Right there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Those were our parents in front of our home, taking on the steps. Mm-hmm. Now, what were you about to say, dear?
He was pointing out an older picture up top.
Yeah. Would this be your father's sister?
It's my mother, grandmother.
Okay.
That's his, my father's mother.
His father's.
And that's my husband's father and mother right there.
Okay.
Their 50th wedding anniversary.
The 50th.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's a blessing. Oh, and I know that picture. That's the two of you all because I see it was remade over here by the African artist.
Right,
so,
yes.
So that's the photo that it came from.
Uh-huh.
That is a very good likeness. It definitely had the smile down. He transposed you, though, so maybe he was looking in a mirror or something because he switched the sides that you were on uh-huh. from the photo in the picture. That's very interesting. You'd have to see both of those to think about it and know
see
it.
See the difference. Yeah, uh-huh. it is. Yeah, just the opposite.
You both look equally happy in both pictures.
This is our eldest son.
Okay, and that's a graduation picture.
When he graduated from college, mm-hmm. with his dad. Mm-hmm. Here it is, our youngest son, when he graduated from college.
Okay.
And this is, these are the three children. The eldest son is not on here. Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's me and my daughter and my son.
At his graduation.
Yeah, and this is daughter at her graduation, the youngest daughter mm-hmm. at her graduation.
Now, how many brothers and sisters did you say that you have?
There were nine of us.
Can you list them from oldest to youngest, please?
The oldest was Alma. Just the first names?
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Alma, Willie Jr., Cleophas. Yeah, by the way, she passed about 3 months ago.
I'm very sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm.
And Agnes. This is her picture right here. She passed. Mm-hmm. Mary. Mm-hmm. Sam. Samuel's son. Mary. You see his picture?
Mm-hmm. See?
Yeah. This is Mary and her husband. Mm-hmm. And Samuel is on there somewhere. And then Maurice. Mm-hmm. And then it is I. Mm-hmm. And my youngest sister, Martha.
So you're the next of the baby. You're number 8.
Right. Knee baby, as they call them.
Now, do you have a legend of this somewhere? A map out? So if somebody else were to look at it, they could tell who was in each square?
No.
No, I haven't done that yet.
Mm-hmm. Need to.
Mm-hmm. That would be something to do.
Be a good little Christmas project. I didn't buy you anything this Christmas. Instead, I got you a legend of the quilt, so you'll know who's in each picture. Merry Christmas. Love you. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Keeping it inexpensive this year. So growing up with 8 brothers and sisters, did you have chores that you had to do at home?
Well, that's interesting. Our ages range in such a way that all of us were never home at the same time. Mm. Because our eldest sister had a daughter who's older than I am.
Okay.
And our brother, our eldest brother, has a son who's just a bit younger than I am. Mm. So they were away from home before I was born.
What year was the first child born?
In our family?
Mm-hmm.
Alma. It's 1923.
And what year was the last child?
Wait a minute. Let me see. 19 must have been 1906. I have to get that because I just don't remember what her birth year was.
How about the birth year of the last child?
She was younger, 2 years younger than I, which is 35. No. She was 39.
So yeah. Probably somewhere over like a 15, 16 year time frame to separate the children?
I'm not sure just how that works out, but I know they were gone before I was there. Mm-hmm. And I remember her oldest daughter and the other's oldest son and all. We were going on up together in separate homes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the original question is, what kind of chores did you have?
Oh, Well, one thing I can remember, my last whipping that I got was hanging up the wash on the clothesline. Mm-hmm. Mother always liked for it to be done in a certain way, hung up nice and special.
So it wouldn't catch the dirt. And
I'd more or less had just thrown it up, thrown them on the line, and that was unacceptable.
That's a whooping. Did you have to go get the switches yourself?
Oh, we did.
And did they twist them together?
We did.
Everybody had the same pairs.
And we couldn't just get any kind of way.
And don't get something that would break real quicker. That's, oh, you get double if they had to go get it. Bringing me this sorry switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and mother had a practice of when we were promised a whipping, you could be sure you were going to get it, but you didn't know when.
Oh yeah, might take a nap. might go to the store,
you
come back.
You go to bed at night and go to sleep, and she would wake you up to the tune of your whipping in the morning. Yes, yes, yes. She wouldn't just give it to you right away. So that was one thing we could remember about the whippings, and we could prefer that Daddy would whip us if we were to get a whipping. Mm-hmm. But Daddy seldom whipped.
Yeah. So you couldn't get that swift, immediate punishment. You got the lingering, you don't know when it's coming. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, indeed.
Well, that's an effective method. Mm-hmm. So did you have to cook or
clean? You were asking about that. One day, I had to do off some of all of it at different times, but I ended up doing a lot of cooking at home, and I enjoyed cooking. And one of the first things I cooked, I believe, was to bake a pound cake, and Mother called it 1-2-3-4 cake. And they still have that recipe today on the back of Swan's Down Cake Flour. Mm. 1-2-3-4 cake. Very simple to make. And we always looked forward to having that. That was our Sunday dessert. We had pound cake and Jell-O. And we did not have electric refrigeration. Mm-hmm. So in the winter time, to get our Jell-O, we'd make it up and set the dish outside. And of course, overnight it would gel. During the maybe summertime, we had an ice box, and we had a man who would come through the community, his name was Mr. King, and he would provide ice for us. We'd get a block of ice, 25 pounds or 50 pounds, and he'd have the tongues that he would either bring it in the house with his tongues, or they would have these ice strings to tie on them, and we could pick it up ourselves. And if we didn't have a refrigerator, sometimes you could put it in a croaker sack with sawdust or some way to keep it. Mm-hmm. And we'd set our Jell-O in the ice box on top of the ice. Mm-hmm. So those were interesting days.
Did your family ever sit and listen to shows on the radio together?
Shows on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Radio programs?
No, I can't remember that we actually sat down to listen, but we listened while we worked. Mm-hmm. And while it was always something going on the radio. Mm-hmm. And most of what we listened to on the radio was gospel programming. And as I said, my mother was a devout Christian woman. And we chose, they chose what we listened to. Mm-hmm. And we did not, they did not think it was proper for us to listen to worldly music. Mm-hmm. And as we went to church, it wasn't a matter of singing one thing at church and going home and everything playing on the radio. We didn't have all kinds of songs and music coming in over the airwaves.
Did you listen to radio programs or sporting events? Yeah, like Joe Louis was fighting on a, you know, something like that?
We would. But our programming was selective also. You know, during those times, there were very few blacks in entertainment. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be something very special to have a black person come on and do something. And the normal thing that most people did, you know, if, oh, so-and-so and so is going to be a black person, going to be on the radio or when TV came. And everybody wanted to hear it. But that wasn't so in our house. If the song, for instance, if it was a music program, and if the song was not appropriate for us as a Christian home, it didn't play just because it was a black person. It didn't matter who it was. It was not, it did not come through our home. Mm-hmm. If they did not approve of the song, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, that's the kind of living that we had in our home. And, oh, I don't know if you have heard of these. Of course, you weren't there from that time. This was before your time. The Old Fashioned Revival Hour was a program that came on every Sunday. What was the preacher's name? Fuller, Charles E. Fuller, I believe, was that program preacher. He came in at 3 or 4 o'clock on Sundays. We had during the week a Bible study. A preacher that came on every day, 9 o'clock. We had, and of course, when Billy Graham started coming, he would come in, I believe, on 2:30 on Sunday afternoons. And some of the prominent preachers who were fixtures on our radio and TV. And those things we listened to and we heard from morning till night. And if a program came on, and it seems like most everyone, they came on every 15 or 30 minutes, a different one. And the leader said, "Let's pray." My mother wouldn't just keep washing the dishes or ironing or whatever she was doing. She stopped while they prayed. And that was just the way she lived her life. Now, we didn't have to do it as children, but that's the way she did it. And she believed that prayer was something that should have been reverenced. And that's why she stopped and prayed. But she believed in a certain position for prayer. She believed that prayer ought to be either, you should either stand for prayer or bow your knees, on your knees for prayer. No such thing as sitting on a seat mm-hmm. when you were an able-bodied person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she, as I told you, she was not a hypocrite. She thought that you should get on your knees or stand when you pray, or when it was being offered. She didn't care if she was in the city auditorium with thousands of people around. Mm-hmm. And they asked to have prayer. Let us pray. If they didn't ask you to stand for the prayer, she would slip to her knees wherever she was sitting. That's just what she believed in, that ought to be. So it wasn't a matter of everybody else is doing it or not doing it. She stuck to her convictions wherever she was. That's the kind of person my mama was. You don't have time for me to tell you about her.
It goes without saying then that church was a big part of your life growing up, you and your family.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. We went to Tuesday night prayer meeting, Friday teachers meeting, even though we weren't Sunday school teachers, mm-hmm. but that's where we went.
Teachers getting a lesson together on Friday,
right,
to be organized for Sunday school on,
right,
Sunday.
The teachers board. Mm-hmm. And
so you always knew the lesson before you got to Sunday school.
Oh yes, I was a Sunday school teacher early. Mm-hmm. As a girl, I helped my teacher teach her class. Mm-hmm. And we'd go to choir rehearsal whenever that was. Was it Friday night or when? I can't quite remember now the night, but we'd go to choir rehearsal, and I'd learn the songs. And that's one reason that, besides having sung them in church, I learned them well. Mm-hmm. And I could sing most anyone by memory, mm-hmm. because that was our life.
So you're one of those people, if you go out to the river for the baptism, you know all the songs.
Well, we didn't go to the river.
Oh, okay.
I was baptized one cold Sunday morning in the winter, I guess it was, at our big church, our denominational church. We called it the Temple, First Temple, the Mother Church. And we used their facilities indoors, the baptistry they had, mm-hmm. in the church there. So I think that was around 5 o'clock one Sunday morning, mm-hmm. when they would have baptism service. Mm-hmm.
What is your earliest memory of formal education? Where did you first go to school?
I was blessed to be able to walk to all of my schools from elementary school through college. We lived a few blocks from the school. And I went to what they call, it's not there anymore now. They've torn all those things down. I got to ride through there the other night. It's entirely a new town, a college town now. Mm-hmm. But Sally Reynolds was my elementary school.
Sally Reynolds Elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it named after? Who was Sally Reynolds?
She was a member of our church and a teacher in the public school system. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they named one of the schools after her. Mm-hmm. And then I went to, in the same complex, it was a different building, Jim Hill High School. Well, Jim Hill Junior High went up to ninth grade then. Mm-hmm. And Jim Hill was one of the, I believe he was a senator in the time of Reconstruction. And the school was named after him. Mm-hmm. And by the time that I got to go to high school, generally, we would have had to go across town to the other only high school that we had publicly. But by the time that I became in the high school department, they made a high school there in that area, in that location. So I just had to change buildings. And then when I got to college.
What was the name of the high school?
Jim Hill High School.
Okay, so it wasn't somewhere else. It was just where you were.
Right.
Okay.
Another mm-hmm. building, but right, same block.
Okay.
And then a few blocks over, there was Jackson College, mm-hmm. where I went to college.
Which is now Jackson State?
Yes. And in the meantime, during that college time, I broke away and I went to Moody Bible Institute mm-hmm. in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated there, I came back to Jackson College, and I got a diploma at Moody, and then I got a degree at Jackson College.
What moved you to attend seminary in between your bachelor's degree?
Well, as I grew up early in life, I gave my life to the Lord. And it was a matter of dedicating my whole self to God to be what He wanted me to be, to go where He wanted me to go. I was interested in becoming a missionary, as if the Lord so chose. It was interesting. There were several things that I was interested in. I wanted to be a mother and a housewife, if that's what God wanted me to be. Or I would like to also, I also wanted to go to Africa as a missionary. And during my growing up, as a part of our youth ministry, this was extra parachurch activities. We had missionaries to come to visit, and mostly they were from Africa, and they would show slides, and we'd have film. And those pictures were so vivid and beautiful. And of course, the ministry there was presented, and I would think, I'd like to go. And as it were, I didn't get to go. I went to Moody Bible Institute, as I was telling you. And while I was there, I found out that Mary McLeod Bethune went to Moody Bible Institute. And she was the only black student there. She graduated in 1895. And I went. I was the only black student in the dorm my first year. And I found that we had similar experiences when we were there. When she was there in 1890s, and then I came along in 1956, 1957, somewhere along in there. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I found out later I had an opportunity to go to Africa in 1986, 1989, and I found that the roadsides, the forest, the jungles looked just like the pictures that I had seen as a girl. Very vivid. just, and it seemed as if, well, oh, I have been here, but I know it hadn't. And it was just something to see the plants growing, the plants that we had as house plants here, growing wild in the desert, I mean the jungle, and on the roadsides. So it was just a magnificent thing.
How long did you stay in Africa, and where did you go when you were there?
I went to visit our church mission. I was president of our women's work at the time, and I went to visit our missionaries from our church. And we stayed about 2 to 3 weeks.
And where were you in Africa?
Liberia. West Africa. Mm-hmm. And then we were blessed after going to Liberia. We went to Kenya. And Kenya was more or less a triangle. From here to Liberia was the distance as from Liberia to Kenya. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a trip to be able to visit the missionary works there. And we got to visit in Kenya. We got to visit the Wycliffe Bible Translation Ministry there in Kenya, West Africa, East Africa. And Liberia, West Africa was the other place. And of course, I got a plus on that trip. Had the opportunity of going on a safari, and we lived in the treehouse there, and that was quite an experience.
Somewhere along the way, from Moody to Jackson College and your graduation, you got married. Where is that in all of this?
Well, since he hasn't said much, let's let him tell about that. That's where I met him, at Moody.
Yeah. How did you end up at Moody Bible College?
Yeah, Moody Bible Institute. I was in the military service in the Air Force. And that's where I came to know the Lord. And the fellows who led me to the Lord mentioned Moody as something I might be interested in when I got out. And so when I got out, I went to the VA, you know, told my mistress to go to Moody. But I didn't know anything about school except that they had used the name to say that's where I might be interested in going. And so they gave me a battery of tests to see, digital tests and what background, all that stuff. And it came out like I knew it would. He said, you ought to be a machinist. And I said, no, I want to go to Bible school. And you know, they're going to be able to pay for it, you know. And so he finally conceded that that's what I wanted to do, and he had a Moody catalog in his desk. And that's it. And,
how long were you, when did you start and end your enlistment? How long were you in the Air Force?
Well, it's for 4 years. And at the end of that time, I guess about 5 months earlier or something, they were cutting the size of the service. And they said anybody who's not going to re-enlist can get out. I think about 5 months earlier. And so just a little less than 4 years.
Where were you stationed?
My last 2 years were in England, near London, outside of London, England.
What was the name of the base?
It was, I know the first base I went to in England was Birdrop Park. That's a name you can't forget.
Birdrop.
Park.
Yeah, that'll stick with you.
So that was the first base that I went to when I was there, and then from there I moved closer to London. It was a hospital base, and I can't call the name of it. It was just outside of London.
Where did you do your training for the Air Force?
In Great Lakes, Illinois.
Okay, and do you remember the name of the base?
Great Lakes Naval Base, somewhere. But it was a naval base, and they had the area of training that I was going to get there. So they sent us there.
I was in the dental field, dental technician, what they call it, you know, with like a nurse would be to a doctor.
Mm-hmm. So how did you end up choosing the Air Force?
Well, you want to make a long story long or short?
The tape is running.
Yeah, well, what it is, you know, I grew up outside of Pittsburgh. Okay, so that was Steel City, and they had all kinds of related industry. And so I wanted to be a machinist.
Even in high school, that's what you
knew? Yeah, well, I was in junior high when I first got interested in it, because they offered the industrial arts in junior high.
Okay, which junior high school did you attend?
Homeville.
Homeville Junior High, yeah. Okay.
Now, well, if you ask where I was born, then I would say I was born in Homeville.
Oh, okay.
But now it's West Mifflin.
Okay. Was there a particular teacher that taught at Homeville that got you interested in machinery?
No.
Okay.
What I'm saying, the area is sort of, at that time, was centered around industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, you know, did things with my hands, fixed my bicycle and stuff like that, and just got interested in doing things with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, when I finished junior high, which was ninth grade, I went to a vocational school.
And what was the name of that school?
McKeesport High School. McKeesport Vocational High School.
McKeesport Vocational. Who was the principal?
I don't know. I remember him, but I don't know his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But see, what it was, Homeville didn't have a high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an arrangement with the cities around that had a high school. We could go to whichever one we chose,
mm-hmm.
and they would pay our transportation.
Okay.
So I had to catch a bus, no, a streetcar, then transfer to another streetcar, and then transfer to a bus,
mm-hmm.
to get to school. Or I could get two streetcars and walk the last mile. So it was shorter to walk the last mile than it was to take the other bus and go all the way around. That's if you hurry, you can make it quicker walking. And so that's what we did. So I went to vocational school where I took up machine shop. And they told me when I signed up, you're not going to get a job as a machinist around Pittsburgh.
Mm.
They just didn't hire us at that time. So I said, I still want to do it. So I took that and I graduated. I did well in class, and they had, the last year I was there, they had a work arrangement with General Electric. We could do our work at the General Electric company, and then do the academics at school. It would be 2 weeks at a time. Okay, now I was good enough to do that, but they said they just wouldn't let me do it.
Mm.
Because they didn't hire any blacks in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you want to know how I got in the Air Force, that's how they got to be.
Because you had the training to be a machinist, but you couldn't get a job.
Couldn't get one anyway to get one around that area.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, if I go to the Air Force, and at that time they were offering, if you join, you can choose what field you want. See? So I joined and chose machinist, and that's how I got into that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, joining the service wasn't unusual, because all my family, men in my family, cousins, uncles, were all military folk in the Second World War. So that was sort of natural anyhow, to want to join the service.
So back to the original question, how did you all meet?
Yeah. Okay, well, it's how I got from machinist to dental assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, when I got to the base, the first night, I had just gotten paid on a little job I had working at a department store. And that first night, the guy who's supposed to be watching the barracks stole the money from the new folks who came in.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so that held me up when it was time for me to finish my basic training and go to my other training.
You were getting gigged happening.
I was having to wait until his trial.
Yeah.
See, as evidence, you know, he stole my money.
Mm-hmm.
He's about 10 or 15 guys. You take the money. So we got delayed, so I didn't get to take what I had signed up for.
Mm.
And by the time they turned us loose, they said, look, we got some space up here at Great Lakes, Illinois, for some dental assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into
take
that.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah. So that's how I got into that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, of course, well, Lord worked it out. That's why I got saved over in England. Mm-hmm. I was working at this. And that's when the guy mentioned Moody. I mm-hmm. came back. I said I wanted to go. But I still didn't know anything about the school. Mm-hmm. I just knew it was, I thought more in terms of a place where middle-aged older folk went to study the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and I was among the older people there because I had gone to service before I went there. Most went straight from high school. Mm-hmm. And so that was a total surprise that there was the young people there. And then the other surprise, did you want to know how we met? I didn't know girls went to Bible school. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go there for that reason. But mm-hmm. when I got there, what you going to do? So when I got there, I met Nita. Mm-hmm. And we got engaged after the first year. And married after I graduated. She was 2 years ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And they had a rule, if you marry you, you have to drop out a year. Mm-hmm. And didn't come back. So rather than do that, we waited 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we got married. And that's, and of course she's from here, and that's how I got in touch with what's going on here in Jackson.
Marvelous. Well, thank you for sharing that. I personally think that's a good place to take the break on this one. On behalf of the Sam Proctor Oral History Program, I'd like to thank both of you for taking the time to let me ask you these questions about your life. I know it's going to richly help people and entertain and inform them to let them know you've had such great experiences. And I'd like to conclude my interview with that thanks, and also to give you the opportunity to say anything that you would like to say, something about the interview, something that was touched on, something that wasn't, something you want to carry on further. And these will be my last remarks, but at the end of your comments between each other, that will conclude the interview. And again, thank you both very much.
Well, you don't have the rest of the night, so we can sign off here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was an interesting experience. We appreciate you coming and giving us this opportunity to share. And I guess we could go on and on. But I guess we'll just stop here again. Well, actually, Anita has a poem that you might be interested in that describes what she's doing now. This project, the biography project. You have time to hear that?
Okay, let's see, where is it? I'm doing the biography of the founder of our church. And it's been a long time coming, but it's been a long time coming, but I think I'm about excuse me, to the place where I'm almost ready to publish my book. And I am using this sort of as a foreword, introduction, along with other stuff. I call it The Biography Writer, and I have sort of made a take on the poem The Bridge Builder. Are you familiar with that?
It's go ahead.
Can you stop? My poem, The Bridge, The Biography Writer, is a take from the poem by the poem entitled The Bridge Builder. It goes like this. An old man going along on a highway came at the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. That sullen stream had no fears for him. But he turned when he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow pilgrim near, you're wasting strength in building here. Your journey will end with the ending day. You never again must pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you the bridge at the evening tide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, and the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. This chasm that has been naught to me, to that fair-haired youth may be a pitfall. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building the bridge for him. So I named my poem The Biography Writer. An aging pedagogue, observing the times, saw a name missing from its annals sublime. A man from history stood out like an alpine peak, towering over his fellows in thought and in feat. A reformer, rhetorician, musician, theologian, minister, prophet, a fearless champion of truth, a valiant warrior for righteousness. The tutor, observing the chronicle's void, accepted the challenge to research and record. She responded with acquiring mind to pen the biography of the bishop so kind. The life of this hero with experiences great developed through obedience for his master's sake. Madam Teacher, asked the observers as they rushed by, why spend your labor with history gone by? Folk have too much stories to tell. What was with Jones we should know so well? To be wisdom's true son, to prove faithful to God, not to pile up success, was his deep quest. His faithful service brought power from on high, radiance it gave him, and grace to die. Great life experiences, fighting the good fight of faith, gave him power with the spirit and a courageous race. The tutor carefully weighed the vestment of time and mulled over the real reason for her sacrifice sublime. Dear observer, said she, behind me there follows today some youngsters, yea, oldsters, who attention will pay. This legacy valued to me, new generations significance may see. They too may read and acquire a rich character of excellence, a spirit-filled life of holy beauty and righteousness. Anita Bingham Jefferson. That is my raison d'etre, my reason for being. Okay.